I was watching a stream of people playing Prey, and people in chat were like, oh, this game is like BioShock. And I was like, no. Like, this game is System Shock. Like, it's, yeah. There's a history here that you have to respect, you know?
This is what happens when you get old, man. You know stuff other people don't know.
Remember the classics, man. Howdy, this is Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 272, and I am your host, Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And Matt is not here. What happened to Matt this week?
Matt fell into a portal to another dimension, but he should be back next week.
Is that what you heard?
I did. I heard he fell into a portal. Wow. Yeah.
Because I heard that he got into this big brawl, like on a JetBlue fight, and he won. Ooh. He won, but he's still recovering, you know, because it was, I guess that's what you do now, is you fight on airplanes and you fight in the terminals outside of airplanes. And that's just,
well, of course. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. Airports are about the worst place on the planet, not just brawl there.
Yeah. And we'll put everything on, right? Put everything on, like on WWE or something. Like they'll just start hosting the events at the airports.
This week's show is actually brought to you by Audible, and Audible's been a sponsor of the show for a long time. And if you go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA, is that what it is?
Yeah, audibletrial.com/ratedNA.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Yeah, audibletrial.com/ratedNA. You can get some cool stuff and help out the show. And I'm actually currently listening to Ahsoka, which is a Star Wars novel in the new canon. It's actually read by Ahsoka's voice actor, Ashley Eckstein. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty fun. It kind of tells what happens after what happened to Ahsoka in the Clone Wars, which I don't want to spoil if you haven't listened to it, but it's good stuff. Kind of tells a little bit about her missing years, and it's nice. It's like filling in some gaps that I had in my head, but
it kind of feels like a story arc of the Clone Wars, you know, in the way that it's like presented as a story. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, and it might have been too. I mean, that's what Dark Disciple was that way as well. It was sort of like lost Clone Wars stuff, you know, lost Clone Wars scripts. Mm-hmm. So it might be that.
Yeah. There's, I mean, I felt like
stuff floating around.
I felt like Dark Disciple had more of like a darkness to it, for lack of a better word. But I could see the Ahsoka book, the story in that book being presented like as is on television. That's kind of like my take.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and I think Ashley Eckstein does a good job, you know, as a reader, which that's, I hadn't cool. actually heard her do before, so I think she's doing a fine job at that. And
yeah,
so definitely check that out. So that's audibletrial.com/ratedNA, and of course, if you put in that code, you will help out the show, and you get a free audiobook. Isn't that what you get?
Yeah, if you sign up for a trial subscription, you get a free audiobook download, which is yours to keep after the, you know. You get a month, then you get your credit for the month, and you can get a book. And then whether or not you decide to stay with Audible, you still get to keep your book at the end. So yeah, it's all gravy.
It's awesome.
You help out the show, which is awesome. But
thanks.
You know, there's plenty of stuff to listen to. I'm still like in it to win it, and it's great. All right. So on this week's podcast, we're gonna just go through some news. We haven't done like a normal, super normal show in a while, so we have some gaming news to catch up on. And then Ash is going to talk about Iron Fist in a sort of a spoiler-free late review fashion. I'm going to talk about the early hours of Prey, the game that just came out last week. And Ash will talk about Dawn of War 3.
Yes, cool, I'm excited.
News.
Big news broke actually this morning. So today is actually May the 11th. And it was announced this morning that the Mass Effect franchise is officially going on hiatus, which I think is a bit of heartbreaking news. BioWare Montreal, which is one of the three studios that were working on Mass Effect Andromeda, is actually being shifted over to work for Motive, who are currently working on Battlefront 2 with Jade Raymond and Jade Raymond's crew. And so it looks like active development on not on all of Andromeda, but on Mass Effect in general, future development is currently on pause.
My understanding is that Motive and EA Montreal are in the same building. So shifting people over really just means like slide your chair over to the other side of the building.
Right. I mean, they might not even move geographic locations, right? They're probably just shifting projects and and project leads and stuff like that. So, you know, that's it's sad. It's interesting. But when a game is worked on for 5+ years, it's incredibly expensive, right? And so you have these publishers that need to make a profit, and they need to, you know, without they don't the publishers never want to fire people that work at a studio. That's the last thing they want to do, because they're effectively giving that talent to other studios, right? Yes. Like, because that's the first thing people do, is they're like, well, screw that. Like, I'm leaving this place and I'm going to this place because they'll pay the bills and they might treat me better. So shifting people around is very common in the industry. It's just a shame that they're shifting people off of Mass Effect. Everyone that's been listening to this show since the very beginning, we're coming up on year 7. Mass Effect is a big part of the show, and it's, you know, for all three of us, I think it's one of our favorite franchises.
I think for people that have been listening since episode 1, the reason why you probably are here is because of Mass Effect, you know, like, that's kind of where we started.
You know, and it's strange, like, while they don't pay the bills by any means, like, a blow to the Mass Effect franchise is a blow to Nerd Appropriate, because it's like, this is something that we care about a lot, and it's a shame to see this happen. Well, that being said, though, I don't think this is the end of the Mass Effect franchise.
I don't think so either.
I think, you know, when done correctly, it is a spectacular world that has, you know, pretty much unlimited storytelling potential, and it's just a blast to play around, and I just think they need to find the right formula, right?
That so, multiplayer is still good, though. It's still good.
It is really good. I don't know if I love it as much as I loved 3, but this is in a post Overwatch world, and Overwatch for me, like, tickled the lizard brain in all the right places. So for me, action gaming is like, okay, that's what it should feel like. And while I love Andromeda's multiplayer, like, I just have so much fun playing Overwatch and have such limited time to play stuff.
That's a good point.
That's kind of what I keep going back to. But so, you know, we don't really have much news other than this. We don't know if there are any actual significant layoffs at BioWare Montreal, but we do know, you know, that Mass Effect, we will not see one for quite some time. With the current way that games of that scope are being developed, I mean, it's looking at the bare minimum 5 or 6 years down the road before you're going to see another Mass Effect. So
I'm hoping at least, you know, whatever DLC was probably in production will be finished, you know, at some point in time. So at least we get whatever was planned to come out for the rest of the game.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if any DLC was in production, because it seems like, I mean, to me, that they would have probably had a season pass of some sort if there was DLC
I don't know that there was, like, I don't think there was a season pass for, like, Jaws of Hacken and The Trespasser.
Yeah, there may have not been. You're right.
And I think it was the same idea where there was a deluxe edition. And, you know, for people that bought Super Deluxe Edition, you're only, like, about halfway through the Super Deluxe packs, because that's going to be a 20-week drip, right? So I think after 20 weeks, you know, hopefully we would hear something about DLC. And at that point, if there was no announcement, I would start to get worried. So we'll just have to wait and see. And that would take us just about past E3. So I think maybe E3 would be a good time to announce Mass Effect DLC, hopefully, right?
Right. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. And, you know, and they are patching the ever living crap out of it. A new patch came out this week that was just, the list of features was insane. So they're working very, very hard to make people happy. And, you know, hats off to them at the studio for working so hard to try and make something awesome.
In a sort of a bad news side note, did you see that Square Enix dropped IO Interactive, like, I think today?
I did see that. And, you know, what's really interesting about that is I've heard literally nothing but good things about that Hitman game that they worked on. I heard it's absolutely fantastic. I personally didn't, I wasn't a fan of the episodic format for a game like that.
Sure.
Some people were fine with it. I would have rather seen it all come out at once, just because me and the episodic stuff, it's hard for me sometimes to go back. I mean, there's still a handful of Telltale games that I'm on, like, episode 4, and it's been like 2 years, you know, it's hard to go back sometimes. So, I understand financially why studios are doing that, but,
they could have developed one episode at a time and kind of gotten the game out a little faster, and then continue to develop the final episodes while the first one was still out, you know?
Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's, likely not, I don't think the developer would ever say, like, you know what we should do? We should split this game up and release it episodically. That seems to me like a very publisher thing to do. Be like, well, let's see how it sells and see if, like, we can actually, you know, consider funding it for X amount of episodes. So I don't know. I mean, that's just me guesstimating, but, yeah, that's a bummer, man. That's like, that's a real shame. And that is, you know, them dropping that title means there might be a lot of people leaving that studio. So,
but I could see a situation in which, like, that studio takes their talents somewhere else, you know, and then does something different. Like, we might get a different game from that studio, which would be, you know, interesting as well.
Right. But I mean, you know, it's scary because you got to remember, like, every time, let's say your studio has 50 people and they're making, like, you know, we'll say, like, a low ball here, like $4,000, 50 people are making $4,000 a month. Well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, where's it coming from? You know? So, I don't know. So it's sad times, but anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Prey.
Okay.
So this is actually a little bit more of sad news. Why did I make it sound like it's not sad news?
I don't know.
But this is just a weird thing I just ran into this afternoon. And there was an article about IGN giving Prey a 4 out of 10. And Prey is getting actually reviewed very, very well, sort of across the board. I think it's getting like 8s and 9s for the most part. And, you know, for those that have been listening to this show for a long time, we don't really review games. We talk about games and kind of discuss, you know, the good things and the bad things about games. We don't ever really give them a score. And a lot of other folks are starting to do that as well, just because it's kind of silly.
It's completely, you know, arbitrary. And it's not a standardized scale. So, like, the scores don't really mean anything, especially when you look at a site like Metacritic. Somebody's 7 on one review website could be a totally different number on a different website. And that's also based on the person that reviews the game and how they're feeling that day. Like, there's just so many factors that go into a game, and it's impossible to use to apply the same, like, arbitrary scale to games of different kinds. Like, from a game like Prey to a game like Braid, you wouldn't look at Braid and Prey and go, well, they both got 8, so they must be similar games. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm just picking two games off the top of my head, but it's like, it's so arbitrary and almost has very little meaning, that it makes it silly. And I think that's why, I mean, at least for me, I decided early on that I'm not going to give numerical scores to games, because they don't make any sense, you know?
Right. And the thing that's very interesting, and we're going to kind of tell our listeners how the sauce is made, we probably could have had more doors opened for us had we given numerical scores early on, just because publishers and some developers are much more likely to give you review copies and to give you stuff if you give them scores. But we don't do that. Since we just talk about them, sometimes they're a little bit more reluctant to give us stuff. So, you know, just letting you guys know that we're sticking to our guns.
We're so punk rock, you know?
I know, we are. Yeah, we are. We do what we can. So anyway, this is just a kind of fantastic. It goes right along with what you're talking about, Scott. So IGN reviewed the PC copy of Prey and actually gave it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which is, like, brutal. And the thing, if you actually go in and read the review actually is pretty positive. But if you go to the verdict at the end, basically they're saying that it was plagued with bugs. They hit a couple blockers, which meant that they couldn't progress in the story, couldn't complete the game. And there was a save bug that actually ended up, you know, really tarnishing their experience with the game, and ended up giving it a 4 out of 10, which is just like a jump kick to the nads.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that is just sort of like basically just trying to, in a lot of ways, just, you know, put a dent in their Metacritic, right? Which is, you know.
Well, I mean, I went and looked at some of this review, and, you know, the perspectives are basically, you know, if you bought this game and you brought it home and you played, you know, for however many hours this person said they played, I would think it was 34 in total, but I think they started getting save bugs maybe within the first 10 hours or so. The publisher tried to give them a save game to kind of, like, help them recover their progress. And then apparently there was a problem with that as well. And so I get that, you know, like, from the consumer standpoint, you might want to give that game a 4 and say, like, well, I can't actually complete the game. So, like, that's a problem, right? So it kind of poses the question of, like, should, game reviewers be reviewing games based on like the content of the game, you know, or do the bugs like somehow dictate, you know, what goes into the score, you know, from the perspective of someone that's buying it, right, to sit down and play it.
Right, right.
That's kind of like the objective part. Now, the subjective part here is that there's a line at the end of this review that says, Bethesda says they're hoping for a fix by the end of the week, but there are no guarantees. So, okay, like, but there are no guarantees sounds like commentary from the reviewer, right? So, which is completely unnecessary. And at this point, the article has an update in the middle of that sentence that says, update, a patch is now available that appears to resolve the issue. So why do you leave the quip in there? Oh, but there are no guarantees it'll be fixed. Bethesda wants to fix this game to make it work, you know? Like, you don't have to you don't have to introduce your snarkiness. I understand you're frustrated because your game save failed, right?
Right.
But at least give a developer an opportunity to patch the game, right? And if they say it's going to come out at the end of the week, you need to kind of like allow them to meet that deadline before you say there are no guarantees, you know?
So right,
while I understand you're frustrated, like this again is the review of one person, right? One person's experience with the game. And then it kind of represents the entire website and then kind of sets off this, you know, ripple of like, oh, IGN gave Prey a 4, right? And then that becomes the headline and it kind of causes problems, right? So like, that's a big deal. So I just think that care must be taken.
And to be perfectly honest, I think that article will get more clicks because it is a very, everyone's going to go, why didn't it get a 4? Like, mm-hmm. I normally don't read reviews, unless it's a game I've already completed just because I'm going to get what I'm going to get. Right. But I read this review just because I was like, well, why the hell did he give it a 4? Like if everyone else is giving an 8 or a 9, like what the hell happened? So, you know, I'm not saying it's clickbait because that's mean to say, mm-hmm. but I'm saying it's like, you're right. I think emotion was involved, which is not something that should happen in a review of any sort, right? Well, like you shouldn't take stuff like that personally. If something's buggy, I don't know. I don't know if you should take those bugs into consideration with the review. It's interesting.
I mean, if a copy was provided at no cost for the purposes of your review, like I think you could be a little bit more objective about like game-breaking bugs, even if they delete your progress. You know, I think that's a different scenario altogether. But I guess the point that I'm making, sort of, for anyone that might be listening, is that, you know, just like anything else, reviews should be not necessarily taken at face value, but you should make your own decision based on the review. You know, when you read a review from another person, even if it's, you know, something that we write, you know, everybody's writing from their own perspective. So you can read this person's review and go, okay, I understand why this person gave it a 4, right? And if the bug is patched, then I would like to know what the quality of the game is at that point, now that the bug is patched. Like maybe the score should be updated or whatever. So and maybe that will happen, but that's kind of the tip. Just like when you would read, you know, something in the paper or a headline in the news, you know, you don't always accept things at face value, but you kind of try to investigate and find out for yourself what the truth is, right? So that's kind of the idea. And the same thing I think is true for these reviews, is to form your own opinion based on, you know, what the person's experience is and what you know to be true about the game.
I love everything you just said. It's like it's like butter in my loins.
Well, I mean, when you're reading scientific articles, which is like something that I do as part of my job, you always kind of need to like think a little deeper than what the person wrote, because you need to, you know, not to say that like scientists are dishonest, but sometimes it's like hard to figure out what somebody actually did in their research. And so sometimes you kind of need to read between the lines and make, you know, make your own decisions and draw your own conclusions, even if you disagree with the conclusions of the author of the paper, right? So it's a similar thing. So
Let's talk about let's jump into something a little bit more cheery and for real this time, and let's talk about games with gold. So free stuff stuff is always good, right?
Yeah, I love to do these games with gold updates because we're kind of like I think some of the low-hanging fruit for especially Xbox 360 has been, you know, done, right? So we're kind of getting like better things on the 360 side, and then hey, you know, Xbox One games for free. Like the thing that I've mentioned in the past is that like if you have one or both of these systems and you have a gold account, you should be adding all of these games to your account every single month as long as you're a gold member, because if you eventually get an Xbox One or you eventually you know, pull your 360 out of storage or whatever, like you'll boot it up and all these things will be available to you, right? Especially the 360 games. I think if you're a gold member and you redeem it, it's yours. I think with Xbox One, if you lapse your gold, then it's lost, right? But
okay.
At least I think that was the case like back in the day. But anyways, this month for May, you get the Walking Dead Season 2, Telltale's Walking Dead Season 2 for the first part of May. Second part of May, actually for the whole month of May, you get a really difficult platforming game called Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams Director's Cut. It's like one of those difficult platformers where you have to switch, you know, switch between characters to help solve the puzzles.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so it adds that.
Did you ever play through Guacamelee?
I did. I played through the whole thing. I loved it.
God, it's so fantastic.
Yeah, that's an example of a platforming game that is difficult but is still satisfying.
And it's some of the best couch co-op too. I played that one summer with my wife and it was just like the most fun we've had.
That's awesome.
On the couch ever. Man, the most fun we've ever had on a couch.
That game,
if you know what I mean.
Whoa. You guys were vertical, right, when you were playing?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyways, this game, if you're in the mood for a challenging platformer, that's something you can get right now on Xbox One. Let's see. For the back half of May, you'll get Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris, which I think is a sort of a top-down isometric, like Smash TV style game, you know, where you're like running around.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about this
and
too.
I think this is a 4-player co-op game as well. I think you can do couch co-op or online co-op, if I'm not mistaken. I played the previous one, which I think was on 360, and it was really fun. On the Xbox 360 side, because it was May the 4th recently, we're going to get Star Wars Force Unleashed 2, which is now backwards compatible with Xbox One. And then for the second half of May, you're going to get Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga, which is like 6 episodes of Lego Star Wars, which is super cool. Which is another great couch co-op game. So these are all pretty good picks, you know?
Yeah, they're fun. I mean, I think the thing that's great about games with gold is you're not getting the most, like, the newest things, but you typically get stuff that's actually pretty quality and fun. So
yeah, I mean, like, when every game costs like $60 these days just to get, you know, right here's a drip of 5 games. You know, maybe I'm bearing the lead here, but the other thing is that like these 2 games are now backwards compatible, you know, and maybe they weren't before. I think Lego Star Wars was, Force Unleashed was not, but I mean, even if you already own those games, now you can play them on Xbox One, which is super cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
can I mention one more thing?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think somewhere in the middle between this episode and our last like regular episode, all 3 Dead Space games are now backwards compatible on Xbox One. And when that was announced, they also made Dead Space 2 and 3 available as digital downloads, which was not available before. And I was like losing my mind about it. So
they're such good games.
That's another such super cool. Games. Yeah. Yeah. And I was
all
like,
all 3 of them. I honestly feel like those games were so ahead of their time. They're going to end up being absolute classics. So
they are, and
they're all good
for different reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I remember playing
scary as hell.
I remember you helped me beat 3. Because it had some co-op in it.
It had some of the most unique co-op systems I've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. And not to get too much into it, but the fact that one player has visions that the other player can't see.
Oh, so good.
Is just fantastic. Like you see this spooky stuff and you're on the headset with each other and one person sees it, the other person doesn't. I mean, no game has ever done that before to my knowledge. So I'm just such a fan of how much that studio innovated. So yeah.
Good times. Okay, so that's your Games with Gold update. Let's talk about fall TV.
Yeah, so we have some great news and some bad news about fall TV. And normally we run through literally everything every year. But this year, since we can't record as much as we used to, we're just going to speed through some of it. But literally, right as I was writing the show notes, Clark Gregg tweeted that Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did get picked up for season 5, which means that they are going to reach their 100th episode, which is just great news for everyone involved. Yeah, and that's just great. So Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if you're not watching it now, definitely check it out. Season 4, I think, is personally my favorite season, especially the last 2 arcs that they've done in the season have just been really, really great.
Yeah, for sure.
And so definitely excited about season 5 coming back. A show I really liked, and I think Scott really liked too, Timeless, was unfortunately canceled after one season.
I'm so mad about this. I remember this show came out. It went through its run. The thing that I'd read was, you know, the mid-season replacement for the show was going to be Taken. And what I read at the time was, depending on how Taken does in relation to Timeless, will probably determine whether or not Timeless gets renewed, right?
Yeah.
And so Timeless was canceled. Taken is going to be renewed.
Oh, ouch.
I'm so pissed because it just sounds like such a dumb premise for a show. And I think it's just because advertisers, you know, want things that are familiar to them, that are safe. You know, they know what Taken is. And so like, that's the show that's going to get renewed. And then, you know, a show that dares to be, you know, semi-intelligent like Timeless, just ends up getting canceled, which is really unfortunate.
And the thing that's really a bummer is, I've been kind of following, you know, their attempt to renew it. And they had, you know, basically the whole next season all plotted out. They had a really kick-ass script for, you know, the first couple episodes. They were basically ready to go.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the numbers out in Timeless were actually pretty solid. Like in terms of ratings, they weren't out of the park, but they were good. Like the ratings were okay. I think it was just a very expensive show with all the period stuff.
Yeah. I just thought it had a chance because of, you know, because people from Blind Spot, you know, were involved in this show, and I'm assuming that show is still doing well, right?
As far as I know, Blind Spot is coming back, so.
Yeah, so I thought maybe they, you know, NBC would sustain both, you know, maybe for the sake of each other, you know?
Anyway, yeah, huge bummer, especially with the way that the first season ended, like on this huge cliffhanger. Well, hopefully they release that script so we can at least read what happens, but sad about that. Sleepy Hollow, which is a show that I never really watched, is canceled after, I believe, its third season, so that's not coming back. iZombie is coming back.
And that's cool.
I wrote here surprise renewal just because I know, like, we had Raul Coley on the show before and follow him on Twitter, and he's like, yeah, like, he basically moved away from Vancouver, like left his apartment, and like the cast has like basically dissipated and gone like about their lives. But now that they're getting renewed again, I think they're all going to have to reconvene and come back.
Nice.
So
nice.
He made it sound like there was no way. It just, the way that his Twitter feed kind of sounded, I was like, oh, so he sounded like there was not going to be a season four, but there is. So that's
cool. Really good for them. That's awesome.
Great. Yeah. Another show that Scott and I both liked called Powerless, is not coming back.
That's really too bad.
Yeah. And not only is it not coming back, all the remaining episodes that were to air this season have been pulled. So,
why can't they just send those to Hulu? It's ridiculous. Like,
I think they might do that. That's what they did with one of my other favorites, Selfie.
Yeah.
Selfie ended up going to Hulu. But yeah, so Powerless is gone, which is a bummer. Like, it was a fun and different sort of show that I think took a few episodes to really find its footing.
Yeah, it was like a workplace comedy with superheroes and Alan Tudyk.
And yeah, and Danny Pudi and Vanessa Hudgens was great too. So I don't know. I liked the cast a lot. I feel like maybe it was a little too workplace comedy-ish, and people were kind of expecting more superhero stuff. But,
sure.
But yeah, I liked it a lot. Quick rundown just for a minute of some of this other stuff, because I do have it pulled up of what's being canceled. Modern Family is renewed for two more seasons.
I got two for you.
Yeah?
Gotham renewed for season four, and Last Man on Earth also renewed, which is good.
God, I love it. I love that show.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Probably one of the best comedies, maybe the best one of the best shows on TV right now for sure.
Wow. Mindy Project, which I think is a show that... Didn't you and Mylin like that show?
Yeah, it's actually ending. So like season five will be the last one on Hulu.
Okay. That's what I just read actually.
Yes.
Time After Time, which is the time travel Jack the Ripper story, that is getting canceled by ABC. Girl Meets World is getting canceled. Rain on the CW is getting canceled. Conviction with Haley Atwell, which is what she went to after Agent Carter, is getting canceled.
Yep.
Masters of Sex on Showtime's getting canceled. So those are some of the big ones, and there's going to be more revealed over the next couple days because the upfronts are happening right now. But, you know, keep an eye out. Some of your favorite shows might be on the bubble, and that's kind of sad.
I mean, there's just like, there's less and less, you know, like I think like cerebral stuff on broadcast television or like and or sci-fi, you know what I mean? And it's just really, it bums me out
for
man.
Sure. That's what I love so much about Timeless. I was like, oh cool, a show where they're gonna go someplace new this week and I'm gonna maybe learn something about something.
I did and the show was accessible. You did not have to be a history buff or even be interested in history to enjoy like what was happening in the show. Like I thought it was very consumable for everybody, which is really too bad.
Indeed.
Hey, this is Amy Acker, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So we are back, and I'm going to talk spoiler-free, a very late review of the Netflix. It's not so late. It came out in March, but it's hard for me to sit down and watch 13 hours of TV right now. So I finally got through Iron Fist, and I'm going to talk about it.
I was going to say, we can call these types of reviews like post-hype reviews, you know?
Yeah, post-hype reviews. Yeah. I guess I should start off by saying I liked Iron Fist, and Iron Fist got a lot of flack for being like, it's the worst Marvel Netflix show. It's weird because what I found myself doing is I only have a couple hours every night, and I said to myself, I'm going to start Iron Fist and see how I like it. First couple episodes, admittedly, were rocky. Like the structure was a little bit rocky. I didn't really care for, you know, how the character was introduced, and, you know, the pacing was really weird. But then I got really into it, and I actually ended up making excuses to watch it. Like I'd wake up really late in the middle of the night and run out and watch an episode. Mm-hmm. And I was really into the things going on. So I figured what I would do is rather than review the things I didn't like about Iron Fist, I would just talk about the five or six things that I really loved about Iron Fist.
Okay.
How about that?
That sounds good. Yeah, do that.
Let's just make this a joyful thing. So these have some minor, very, very minor spoilers. If you watch the trailer, I probably won't reveal anything that you didn't see in the trailer. But so in Marvel Comics, there is a group of ninja bad guys called the Hand, and they were featured in Daredevil. And they weren't in Jessica Jones. I don't think they were actually in Luke Cage either. But they were definitely in Daredevil, especially season two, very, very heavily. And the Hands do feature heavily in Iron Fist as well. But one of the things I loved about Iron Fist was that it goes a little bit into the politics of the Hand and how there are different warring factions within the Hand. And maybe how the Hand may not be as just is straight up evil as you think. So they do some great things with the organization, make them interesting. I think they make sort of the rivalry that exists within the Hand pretty cool. And I think they become just sort of a great villain group within this series. So that's one thing that I really
like. I like this idea of, I think like gray is the new plot point, you know, like in every, in everything.
Well, it's cool because, you know, if you watch the Defenders trailer, you know that the Hand is basically going to be featured pretty heavily in the upcoming Defenders. So I think it's, you know, if you want to watch the Defenders, which I think everybody that's watched Daredevil or Jessica Jones or any of those shows is probably dying to see the Defenders. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to know as much about their villains as possible. And I think this is good information. And I think some of it's pretty fun. So I like the Hand. The next thing is, Rosario Dawson's character, Claire Temple, gets, I think, more screen time in Iron Fist than she's gotten in all the other shows combined.
Ooh.
She is in the show, I want to say, probably from the midpoint on in every single episode, featured prominently. And not only that, she fights in this show. So she learns to fight a bit, and she has some fight scenes. And she's absolutely fantastic. Like, I think people forget that Rosario Dawson's been acting a very, very long time, and she's really, really, really a solid actress. And I think a lot of her acting chops are on display on the show. She just brings this realistic demeanor to conversations that are otherwise silly. Like the way she reacts to conversations about mystical kung fu and stuff, it's just priceless. Mm-hmm. And she's really, really good in it. So if you like Claire Temple at all, she's in this a lot. So that's another thing I really liked.
That's awesome.
So the basic premise is that the character Danny Rand was this kid, and this is all, again, stuff from the trailer, so it's nothing, you know, nothing too spoilery. He's this kid who gets in a plane crash and disappears in the Himalayas and learns mystical, magical kung fu. But he was the son of billionaires who owned this corporation called Rand Corp. And he reappears after, I think, about 15 years and tries to get his company back. And some of the people running the company are a brother and sister who are his childhood friends named the Meachums. And you get to see what happened to the Meachums 15 years after Danny disappears. And they become, you know, really, really important characters in the series. And they're not kung fu masters. They're business people. Hmm. So you spend a lot of time in the boardroom, a lot of time getting to know the Meachums and, you know, kind of understanding the politics of like big business as well, which is a weird aspect of the show, but yeah. It's actually relatively well done. And I just want to say that the acting chops on the Meachums is fantastic. Like, while it's all about business, I really feel like I'm gonna look up their names real quick.
That kind of factored into Daredevil though too. It's like you know, the main antagonists, like, you know, the he did a lot of bad things, obviously, but the prominent problem was that he was going to like kick old people out of their homes. Right. And that's kind of the thing that made you angry at him, you know, as a human being.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So the Meachums, Ward and Joy Meacham, Jessica Straub, who was actually on the reboot of 90210. So she is one of the Meachums, Joy, and Tom Pelfrey, who's Ward Meacham. You know, I'm dead serious. If you combine their screen time, I would say that they are in the show more than Danny Rand, who's the main character. So they're in it constantly and they just choose scenery. And I think they do a really great job with the stuff that they're given. So I actually really, really like them. Next on my list is, the mystical arts and, how they handle, death and resurrection in the show.
Okay.
So one of the things that all the Marvel Netflix shows kind of tackle a different sort of angle of the, you know, the Marvel universe, and you know, Luke Cage is sort of like this street level Harlem, and then Daredevil kind of goes into the mystical stuff a little bit in season two with the Hand, but this time we're getting like full on like mystical, magical kung fu, you know, vanishing cities, very like Doctor Strange, you know, high concept sort of stuff. And okay. I thought it was really neat, and pretty well done too. So I liked that aspect of it. And the thing that the number one on my list is the character of Colleen Wing, who is becomes Iron Fist's like quote unquote partner throughout the series. I don't want to reveal anything, but she's got a really cool arc. She's a martial arts instructor, which is how he ends up meeting Claire Temple. So if you remember the end of Luke Cage, Claire Temple went to take martial arts lessons, and Colleen Wing ends up becoming Claire Temple's teacher. And I'll say this, Jessica Henwick, who is an X-Wing pilot in the new Star Wars movies and is one of the Sand Snakes in Game of Thrones, she plays Colleen Wing. Her fight scenes are fantastic. Sweet. She's really, really good. Really believable. She has just a really great presence on screen. And even if you watch the show for nothing else, none of the other things on my list of cool things about Iron Fist, watch it for Colleen Wing, because she's awesome. And the fact that I'm really stoked that she's in, I looked at the who's in the Defenders series, and she's in every episode of the Defenders as well.
Nice,
so
nice.
Great character. Really, really cool. Really well done. She acts well. She wields a sword like a champ. So really, really liked it. So those are the things I liked about Iron Fist. There were things, of course, I didn't like, but you can read everybody else's reviews for those. But yeah, if you're looking for an excuse to watch it, there you go.
Well, you got me interested in it. So I'm kind of like, I'm stoked to see it now.
Yeah, man, just hang in there and pay attention to the things that I talked about. And I think you'll end up having a pretty good time.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Let's talk a little bit about Prey. Not the PC version, but I played the Xbox One. I'm actually just going to talk about the demo. I wanted to talk about this last week when the demo came out, but then we I don't know what we did, but here we are and we're going to talk about it. Okay. So I think the demo pretty much told me everything I needed to know about this game to know that I'm going to play it eventually when I, you know, once I complete Mass Effect. And what is really interesting is that I think I read something from the developer basically saying that if you know, the Arcane's the developer of the game, and they basically said that if Dishonored is sort of like cast in the mold of Thief, then Prey is a game that's cast in the mold of System Shock, which is, our listeners might know,
one of your favorites.
Yeah, System Shock 2 is probably like one of my, you know, top five games of all time. So, and I didn't really know anything about Prey before the game came out. I just knew that it looked nice, like had a great like visual aesthetic. And so when the demo came out, I sat down and I was like, well, let's give this a try. And then you very quickly realize you are, well, I don't want to give too much away, but you are, shenanigans ensue pretty quickly. And you realize that this has very quickly become a game of like survival in the style of a game like Dead Space or System Shock, which is really exciting, right? Because so what that means is that you're kind of doing things where you're going through situations in which you're not super powerful, and you kind of need to use your environment. You have skills that you can unlock and upgrade through like your like physical body, you know, through like augmentations and stuff like that. You'll constantly be looking for different weapons in the environment, ways that you can use the environment to your advantage by picking up things like explosive canisters or using, you know, electrical conduits to thwart enemies and things like that. So it's a game, you know, much like Dead Space, where you're not all powerful and you really need to be careful. And, of course there's things like jump scares in there too.
Right.
Yeah. There are these, it's crazy, dude. There are these creatures called mimics. They're kind of like the,
this is what everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
They can be like any object. Yes. Can you honestly not tell which one it is?
Well, it's cool. The game kind of plays with you a little bit. So the, like you said, mimics are like kind of like the grunt unit of the game, and they're sort of mischievous in the way that they attack you, right? They don't just like, they'll just come straight at you. Sometimes they do, but they do it when there's like generally more than one to attack you simultaneously. But sometimes they'll come to attack you and you'll kind of like hit one of them with your wrench, because like, you know, in perfect fashion, like all these games, you always have to start with like a hand tool as your primary weapon, right? Mm-hmm. You'll hit them and then they'll run away. They'll run around a corner, and then you'll go around the corner and they're not there anymore. And then you're kind of like looking around, and you know, there might be a couple of boxes on the ground. So you run over to the boxes, and all of a sudden one of the boxes turns into a mimic and then jumps in your face, right? And so it's like,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. But the thing that's cool about that is that if you're, you know, maybe you're jumpy or you're suspicious, you can actually go up, you know, to those objects and bash them with your wrench before they transform. You can kill a mimic while it's hiding from you, right? So it kind of becomes this game of cat and mouse with the mimics. And in great numbers, they can kill you. And then there are more traditional enemies as well, like kind of more like stand-up humanoid type enemies. And they all kind of have this like black, gooey kind of look to them. You know, it's all very like evil looking stuff, right, on the in the environment that you're in. And they'll, you know, they'll do a little bit more damage and have more traditional attacks and stuff like that. But when you start the game, you're basically armed with like a hand tool, like a wrench or something, and this other thing called a glue gun, which I think is an interesting wrinkle on this game. So the glue gun is used to, if you shoot it at an enemy, it will slow them down and kind of freeze them in place. But you need to shoot like a lot of glue at them to stop them. You can also use the glue gun to help you with your mobility. So if you're handy with it, you can create like a staircase, you know, and I'm sure I've told you guys, but there are reports that people are able to speed run this game in less than 10 minutes. And I think the way they're doing that is by using the glue gun to kind of like bend the physics of the game and go to places you're not supposed to go to.
Okay. Yeah, I heard about these speed runs too.
Yeah. And that's that. I mean, that kind of stuff is ridiculous, but it just kind of tells you that like they put a lot of effort into designing this interesting weapon that is not like, it's not like a damage dealing weapon. It's kind of like a weapon that,
well, yeah, I heard most of the weapons of the game, because it is a sort of like in a scientific/industrial yes. area. There's like not really military weapons in the game.
Oh no, you're kind of like fighting for survival. And I'll tell you I think the third or fourth weapon that I picked up in the game was just like a Nerf crossbow. Right. And the only reason I could see you using the Nerf crossbow would be to like distract enemies so you could sneak past them. So if you want to play the game in stealth, you can do that as well. And what I quickly noticed about the environment is that, and they tell you this too, like in the kind of like on the back of the box, if you will, is that you can play however you want, right? And so I was running around in the environment. I got lost at one point. And I got lost like going up and down the staircases. And I saw where I wanted to go. It was like across this atrium. And so I was like, I can't figure out which way to go up and down the stairs. I'm like completely turned around. I was like, fuck it. I broke a window and then jumped on top of like some lights that were hanging from the rafters. I ran across the lights and then ran over to the other balcony. And I was like, holy crap, they put this here on purpose for me to do this, right?
Wow.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So like if you want to like, you know, and it's just like system shock too. So you can be, you know, you can be a hacker, you can be a fighter. You can be someone that's like more focused on upgrading your weapons. And so like, if you want to go look for information so that you can unlock doors with, you know, the appropriate keypad codes, you can do that. Or you can be someone who is very mobile and you can climb into like an air vent and sneak in that way. Or you could just break a window and like make a bunch of noise and get to where you need to go by doing that too. So, it's just a really, it's really exciting that we, are starting to have games like this again. We just talked about Dead Space and how fantastic that is. And so Prey is exactly in that same mold, that type of game. If you're into that kind of thing, that System Shock vibe where you're just kind of like fighting for your life and kind of getting scared here and there as you're playing, then Prey is your game. And I'm certainly going to be playing it as soon as I have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I've been hearing nothing but good stuff, and I'm glad you're liking it. So that's
it's really
awesome.
Exciting. Yeah, all that stuff like inventory management, crafting, like, you know, fighting. It's just, it's crazy, man. It's super cool.
It's good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about Dawn of War 3. So we were given a couple review copies of Dawn of War 3, which is being published by Sega and developed by our pals at Relic. And
this is the RTS, right?
This is the RTS. Yeah, so I should start off by saying, like, I used to play Warhammer 40K a long, long time ago, back when I had time to actually paint hundreds of miniatures and and memorize very complex rules, which I don't have anymore. But so I'm familiar with the franchise. I like it a lot. I think it's really, really cool. I think people have been ripping it off for decades now. The quick rundown is, if you don't know anything about Warhammer 40K, it's basically like future fantasy. So there's like space elves, there's space orcs, there's space, you know, monsters, which are Tyranids. And, it, you know, it's also very, very similar to StarCraft. So if you're familiar with StarCraft, one would say that, or could say that StarCraft may have borrowed heavily from the Warhammer 40K.
Isn't that funny that that's the era that we live in now, is that people might look at Dawn of War and be like, oh, this is like StarCraft, you know?
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, right.
Because I was watching a stream of people playing Prey, and people in chat were like, oh, this game is like BioShock. And I was like, no. Like, this game is System Shock. Like, it's, yeah, there's a history here that you have to respect, you know?
This is what happens when you get old, man. You know stuff other people don't know.
Remember the classics, man.
Gandalf, you just know shit about stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
But Dawn of War 3 is, it's interesting because Dawn of War 2 was, they kind of limited the number of human units you have, but Dawn of War 3 is a massive all-out brawl with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different units at your command. So if you're into RTS games at all, and you're familiar with the work that Relic does, I think they do some of the best combat, you know, unit to unit combat that exists in RTS games. Just the level of detail on
that's
each
what I
one
remember.
Of these units,
yeah, the game is incredibly detailed.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, in when you like do something like fire a rocket barrage into a group of enemies, and you just watch the chaos ensue and just, you know, watch the units fly and scatter and how all the models react, it's like, it's a miracle that like computers can run hundreds of little models all blowing up and flying around. It's basically like the ultimate toy box. One of the cool things that Dawn of War 3 does that I really liked is it does have a campaign. I would say I'm probably about halfway through it, so this is a review in progress, but the campaign is all three factions. So you can play as the Space Orcs, the Space Marines, and the Eldar, which are essentially Space Elves. And rather than making you just play through as the Space Marines, which is what has happened in the past, they actually let you play through as all three factions. So you'll do one mission as the Space Marines, the next mission as the Orcs, the next mission as the Eldar. So it's one big story unraveling from three different perspectives.
Nice.
And it also gives you an opportunity to try out all the different units and basically play through a single narrative with three different factions, which is really, really, really fun. So you get to, for instance, for there's basically a power struggle within the orcs who are, you know, you kind of think of the space orcs in this, or they're like cockney Mad Max orcs, right?
Yeah, okay.
They're just like, you know, kind of snotty, like, you know, and there's this faction war going on between them. So you're fighting as the orcs, and then once that mission's over, you'll take over as the Eldar and see like the damage that the orcs caused by this faction war going on. So it's really, really cool how that unfolds. One thing that they did different this time that I think some fans of RTS games might be a little may not love is that they kind of borrowed some ideas from current MOBA games. So all the factions have hero units, and I want to say there's probably more than maybe 15 total. So there's a good number of these hero units in the game, and they all have different powers and different upgrade trees and different customizations with different skins. And the heroes, you can bring them into combat with your regular troops, and they just lay waste to everything. So for instance, they might be like a giant titan or a mechanized orc with a giant claw on his arm, and they'll have special abilities that only that unit has, right? And so what you're essentially doing most of the time, I found myself doing, is like you're going to be commanding your hero unit and then basically using the other units in your squad to kind of back up your hero unit, just because your hero units are typically very, very powerful.
Yeah. So didn't Warcraft 3 unit that you could spawn into your battlefield? I think
I think that's it has become common, but I think the reason why some people are a little don't love this is that I think it's just they're so powerful, right? In Dawn of War 3 they are and sometimes they're close to unstoppable. So you can take, once they're fully upgraded and ready to go, they're pretty badass. So.
You know what game I remember having really OP hero units from back in the day was? Total Annihilation. Do you remember that one?
I do remember that game. Yeah. My gosh.
That game had like the hero unit that had the rolling death ball of doom. And if you could drop your hero unit into that battlefield, he would just like lay waste to everything in the immediate vicinity. But that's kind of like what that reminded me of when you told me that. I just think it's funny, you know?
Yeah. So one thing I haven't even really touched on at all, which I might not, because I mean, I'm going to be full disclosure here. I'm not great at RTS games. My days of being able to manage hundreds of different things at the same time are long gone. So I'm lucky if I can control maybe a dozen, but I'm really enjoying the single player campaign. I think it's a lot of fun. I think the polish is just, it's gorgeous to look at and really fantastic to kind of play around in the world. I definitely recommend it if you're into RTS stuff. So it's available now. Check it out. Dawn of War 3 from Relic. I think Matt is currently playing it with our other review copy. So maybe on next week's show, we will dive a little bit further into it.
You know, what's funny is like, as you were describing this game and the quality of the game and the different like aspects of the game that you liked, the thing that came to mind for me was Company of Heroes.
Which is also Relic.
Yeah. So yeah. Good on them, right? They have two super strong RTS series going side by side. And so
the thing I think that Relic really does well, right, is they built this game, or basically their RTS system is, okay, I'm going to build these awesome looking things. They're gorgeous to look at, right? And then I'm going to pit them against other gorgeous looking things, and I'm just going to see what happens. And
it's amazing.
It's the same exact thing that you would do when you were a kid playing with like G.I. Joes or your He-Man figures or whatever. And you had this massive battle that played out in your head. But now with these RTS games, you can actually pit like hundreds of your toys against hundreds of other toys and watch the carnage unfold. So
that's really exciting.
I think it is. And if you're into that, you know, Warhammer at all, I think it is. I think it's definitely, you know, something you should pick up.
Nice. Cool. Well, I think we made it to the end, man.
I think we did it. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 272 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that is at NerdAppropriate on Twitter. You can email us directly if you have a question or if you want us to cover something. That is Matt, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com, or just a general question. You can send that to nerds@NerdAppropriate.com. We are, of course, on Twitch.tv/nerdappropriate. Haven't been using that lately, but we will one day. And of course, we have our Facebook page as well, which is /nerdappropriate on Facebook. Upcoming stuff, we will not be at E3. We will be at San Diego Comic-Con, and a couple of us will likely be at PAX West. So those are the cons that we have coming up. Mm-hmm. And we can announce that on our next episode, we are going to have the voice of Sarah Ryder from Mass Effect, Freda Wolf, on the show. So Woot. She will be here on our next episode.
Are
so
you sure? Is it the next episode or the next episode?
I think it's this coming up Sunday. Oh, it might be the next.
No, I think it's two episodes from now.
I think Scott's right. So a couple episodes we'll have her on.
Sweet. So look forward to that. And then we will see you next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. What does Matt say? Okay.
He says, all right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I say, hey, everybody.
Yeah.
And you have your own. Yours is like, ha cha cha cha.